Hey, everybody. I'm Uncle Jim, and I'm grateful to know I am an alcoholic these days, today. Hey, it's now my privilege to introduce our speaker for tonight, and her name is Ariana. And just a little history on her. She comes from the fabulous town of Coalinga. She's recently moved to Visalia to come to some fabulous meetings in our local area. I found out something really, really important, that she's my sister, and I didn't even know it. And you asked, how could this be? Well, I'll tell you, because her sponsor is married to my sponsor. I think that makes us a family. She's been in the program for about 3.5 years. Her home group is called Amity Group, and I do believe it's a ladies group that meets on Tuesdays at 6:30. So if you're interested in a ladies group, you could probably contact Ariane or somebody else in that group and check it out. One of her one of her favorite expressions are first things first in the program first. And I like that. I like that. One thing, one step at a time, a little bit different there. But if you can't pronounce her name, Ariane, it's kind of like hairy man. So just to let you know, that kind of reminds me of myself. And that's all I got on it's hard for me to say your name, Ariane, today, hairy man. And I'm so excited to hear her share. So please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Ariane, please.
Hi, guys. My name is Ariane. Rhymes with hairy man. I'm an alcoholic. I don't know what alcoholic rhymes with. That's all right. I'm so honored to be here tonight. I have people that want me to do speaker meetings, and I don't know. I'm not always sure how to get into that kind of stuff. And I'm just hoping that my story is worthy of the speaker meeting that I am in now. I'm going to try to make it worthy for you. I am very fortunate to have found the women's Amity group that is on Tuesday night, because I needed that solace. So my story, my experience starts like many of your experiences, which was pre-AA was pretty crappy. My pre-AA experience was pretty rough. And I have like two ways of framing my life before AA. And one is like the glamorous way, the censored way, the sugar-coated way. But if I'm honest, which I can be with you guys, there is a whole very dark, very icky underbelly, underside to what I can paint out to be a very cool life. I did a great job at ruining all of the fun life experiences I tried to give to myself with alcoholism. Like, I did a solid job at that, and it over the years made me very, very afraid. I grew up in an alcoholic family. I don't always know if that means much. You know, when I was growing up, I told myself I would never be an alcoholic. That doesn't mean anything when it's your turn to start drinking heavy like that. I think I always thought that because of the rhetoric I heard in the house, that if I just didn't drink, or if I just managed my drinking, then I would be okay. And I, you know, I think a lot of us know that that is definitely not the case for us. We cannot manage our drinking. It is unmanageable. So, you know, that my father's still an alcoholic, which is sad. But I think there is relevance to knowing an alcoholic still and having an alcoholic still kind of in your life, even if it's in the background, because the sickness is very hard to deal with, because it gives me like a frame of reference. Just like, this is your life if you keep going. But AA gives that to me too. When I listen to other people's stories, their alcoholic stories, I know that there are a lot of yes in my story, that my bottom could get a lot farther down if I don't get a real grip on this, which I think in about 3.5 years, I have gotten a real grip on it. But that's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. That has nothing to do with my own willpower, because it's not about willpower. So as I grow up, the thing is, like, being around alcoholic insanity, when you grow up, is it becomes normalcy. Like, the insanity was very normalized to me at a very young age. And so as I, you know, grew and became an adult, I don't think that I thought I was being insane. You know, I thought I was being pretty sane. And, you know, it took a while to actually manifest. My first drink was at 14, and I did black out, but I didn't start heavily drinking until I was 21, probably, in college, when all the ingredients came together. And the alcoholic man and the heavy drinking roommate and the drunks at my job, and then boom, there it was, alcoholism, really hard, really fast, took me down pretty quickly. And so, you know, the glamorous part of that life, I can say, is I went to college and I did pretty good and I graduated with honors, blah. But the truth is, the alcoholic, dark, heavy truth is that I ruined every close and good relationship that I had, that I humiliated myself on a regular occasion, that I got fired, that I got arrested. Okay. And at the age of 23, I was like, I've had enough. I'm going to quit drinking for my birthday gift to myself. And I pulled that off by myself for almost a year. And then that first friend I drank with when I was 14 and blacked out, you know, we met up again as adults, and she was like, just drink with me. And, you know, even though I said I wasn't drinking, I drank. And it took like another 5+ years of hardship and misery for me to come and finally get here. You know, it takes a while. So, I mean, I've done some traveling, but again, like, I ruined everything. I lived overseas, and I was a teacher, and that's glamorous, and I, you know, but then I dated a really horrible man, and I say I couldn't get out of it, and there's a part of that that's true. Like, you know, step 7 is all about our character defects, and my character defects was, like, I really had no idea how to get out of some of the stuff I got myself in. I had no boundaries. And I was a horrible teacher, and I did horrible things. I fell into a burning ring of fire and burnt my ass, and that's a real story. So, I mean, and there's more stories. You know, I've done more things. But the thing is, like, I lost more and more trust for myself every time I went out into the world and did so much damage to my psyche, you know? Before I got here, because I had that small gain in success when I was 23 years old, I thought maybe, just maybe, I could do that again, and for real, you know? So I had no problem admitting I was an alcoholic, but I had a problem asking for help. You know, you don't ask for help where I come from. That's just not how it goes. So, and I'm a tough woman, don't you know? I'm so strong, you know, I can handle this. I'm not afraid of anything. But, like, the truth is, I was very, very afraid of who I was when I was drinking. And at the end of my days, I was very isolated and very alone and constantly blacking out and falling down and constantly calling into work to take time off to nurse my alcoholism. My last drink was October 17th, 2016. It wasn't necessarily, I mean, I wanted to have a last drink for a long time, but I don't think I was aware at that moment that it was going to be my last drink for good. I had done some real big damage to a friend of mine. I was supposed to be in a wedding, and I showed up drunk, and they told me to leave. And I don't know, after that, I was so good at humiliating myself and hurting other sick people, but, like, allowing that to infiltrate out and hurt people that really are pretty normal. And I don't know, something was wrong, and I knew something was wrong for a long time, but that's a new level of humiliation. So it was not even a drunk. It was what I could find after the bender. And I mean, I was drinking, like, leftover beers that had rolled under the couch and defrosting beers I had put in my freezer. And it was really, really disgusting. And I spent 3 months trying to get a grip on myself without AA. And in those 3 months, the insanity that is me living as an alcoholic with no recovery, I don't know if it was worse than all the times as an alcoholic, but I was feeling all of it, and I was doing really stupid stuff. So that pain is very real when we don't have a program, because there's no release, there's no way, there's no tools. It's just doing stupid things over and over again and wondering why. why do I feel so bad? You know, and the truth is, and I have a hard time admitting this, is that there is a tremendous amount of trauma that I've experienced because of alcoholism. And that's going to require outside help to really fix it. And I know that, and I'm okay with that. I will get there when I get there. First things first. Recover from alcoholism had to come first. So, you know, I'm going to drink, or I have to try AA day, was a Monday. It was like one of the President's Days. It was a holiday. It was in January. And I had been preparing for this because I spent a year making lists of all the AA meetings I could find in the Central Valley, in Fresno, in Hanford, in Visalia, in Tulare, that I could get to, because I knew I needed help. It was just so freaking hard to go out and do it and ask for it. I felt ashamed. I felt embarrassed. I was afraid of being rejected. But it was a Monday, and there was some crazy outbursts with some family stuff, and I cried and cried, and I was like, look, if you, and it was like, and I just wanted a drink, but I promised myself I would at least try. So Tuesday Women's Amity was just the one that happened to fit into the schedule. If it had been on a Wednesday that I, you know, that I needed it, it might be a different home meeting, but God has God's ways. So I ended up at Tuesday Night Women's Amity, and when I got there, I wasn't afraid of owning that I was an alcoholic. That was the first time I had ever admitted to being an alcoholic in a space where it's not like alcoholism is celebrated, but it is understood. So I finally felt like I was safe to just be a hot mess, because that's what I was for a very long time. And I'm so, so grateful for that. I really believe that, like, I've always had a higher power. I didn't come in needing to grapple with that concept. Step 1, 2, and 3 weren't very hard for me because I have a God. I call her she. She has been with me this whole time. Sometimes I call him he, because God, gender is the human thing. I don't know. I think God's bigger than that. But I think that she's been with me this whole time. And the thing is about my higher power is it's not all sparkles, rainbows, and butterflies. God for me is like, if you don't get your shit together, I'm not making this easier for you. You know what I mean? And the thing is, it had to get so hard. Those 3 months outside of the program made it so hard to exist, to just exist without tremendous pain constantly. If I didn't have that, and if it didn't get worse like that, if God had relieved me before I got to you, I would still be living without a lot of tools, even if I was sober, even if I was still white-knuckling it. So the cool thing about AA is it gives you this program of recovery, right? It gives you steps and traditions and meetings and connections with human beings that are like you and that have lived through it and survived to tell the tale and are now thriving. It's, you know, we move from surviving ourselves to thriving in life, and that is a gift that AA gives to us. Either way, it took me a while to finally ask for a sponsor. I think you can kind of do 1 through 3 on your own a little bit, but steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, I think we need to do with a sponsor. So it took me a while to ask for a sponsor, you know, because I didn't feel like I deserved a sponsor, and that's the truth. My sponsor wants me to remind people that I did live in Coalinga, which is an hour away from Tuesday Women's Amity, and I came every week. Every week I drove 2 hours to get to my AA meetings because I was so willing and so desperate and so in need of help, and I had no problem with admitting that at that point. That first meeting gave me my first chip 3 months, and I never in my life have felt the outside world giving me praise for how hard it felt inside to get that much time. Does that make sense? Like, I've never had any kind of support with my alcoholism before AA. So getting 3 months was a lot for me. It felt like a real journey uphill. It felt like I was fighting zombies and which are living inside of my head, and ghosts that are haunting me every night. And so to have people applaud when I took a chip for the first time, that was life-changing for me. I'm all about taking chips because, especially at the beginning, like, I think that having pride and having support with your accomplishments is a really big deal, and I think that's important. And I'm a big person that believes in women, supporting women, because I do feel like some of the stuff, not all of the stuff, it's all alcoholism, but some of the stuff we experience as women alcoholics is very unique to the female experience, and I think that it helps to have other women around to kind of relieve that shame and that guilt and that fear. So I did finally ask my sponsor. It was a roundup in Fresno, because she was one of the first people that I had encountered that made me feel like I did deserve to recover from alcoholism, and I did deserve to have a sponsor and work these steps, you know, no matter where I was, no matter where I started. And I'm really glad she let me have that. And I'm really glad she accepted when I asked. The way I was raised in AA is you let people come to you because they need to decide what they want and if you have it, and they need to have the courage and the willingness to do their own program. So she let me come to her, and I really appreciate that. I know not all circles are that way, but I'm really grateful that my circle is that way, because I think that it empowered me. Before AA, I was letting people run the show. That was my life. You know, alcoholism was the thing that gave me boundaries, because if you were going to get in the way of my drinking, I was going to get you out of the way. But in all other aspects, to avoid losing your love, which was a big fear of mine, I would do almost anything. I would bend over backwards. So finally I started working the steps in a very authentic way, and it took me a while because of my fear of rejection and abandonment, and my fear of that is old, that comes from family and youth and all that crap. These fears, I thought that my sponsor, if I didn't do things right, like, she would love me. Like, I really, there, it was a big thing. Like, I have this issue with authority figures. My sponsor doesn't even like the word sponsorship. Because, and I think I understand why, because it can do this weird warped relationship thing where there's someone that has power over someone else. And she's never approached me like that. Not one time in our relationship has she treated me like I am inferior to her. She has only been helpful and sweet and loving and kind. And I needed that. I know some people need AA boot camp. You do you. If you need boot camp AA, do boot camp AA. I needed someone to be nice to me. Like, I feel like I didn't trust anyone that was nice, because it always felt like they wanted to get something out of me. And so when she was nice and I saw that it was coming from a genuine place, I opened up more and I opened up more. And the more I showed up for the meetings that we set, and the more I did the work, and the more I asked what's next, because I didn't get homework assignments, right? I know that's I asked. It was on me. My recovery was 100% on me, which I needed for myself. I needed to have my own power.
And you guys,
I needed to take it back. So as I went through this program, and as I started the steps, which were basic, which, you know, old school, like, step one was a page. She asked me to do a page. I did a front and a back page, but I just did a page of the insanity, and I had a lot up until that point. And it wasn't the stories, it was the insanity. And I really feel like when we finally start working the steps with someone that we trust, the healing is profound, totally from the beginning. So the insanity was where I started, and the powerlessness, which was a very hard word for me to own because I'm a powerful woman. The powerlessness, the more I accepted it in my alcoholism, the easier it became to accept it in other situations in my life that I do have no power over. And the more I just accepted that I had to start at step one and not at step four or eight, the easier it became to just be patient and mindful and enjoy the ride. I'm so used to running through life, so I took my time on these steps. I let the meaning sink in. I went through it with consciousness, and I tried to let it change me, and it did. So I feel like, you know, steps one, two, and three, it's kind of like we've been living in this pile of filth our whole lives. For some of us, our whole lives. And it's the first time we ever say, you know, I'm filthy. I'm powerless over alcohol. I need to take a bath, right? Like, admitting that only a power greater than myself, water can be greater than myself, God can be greater than myself. And humbly asking, you know, for his care and protection. Like, I do feel like that would be the first time you step into a bath, spiritually, maybe in your whole life. Step four took me a while, I'm going to be honest. And that's okay. Again, I didn't have pressure from my sponsor. I got to work and operate on my time, and I wasn't running from this. I had willingness. I was driving an hour back and forth each week, sometimes twice a week, to get to meetings. I had willingness. So I didn't get pushed, which is good, because I think, I don't know, when it comes my time to sponsor other women, I don't want to exhaust myself chasing after people that aren't ready, and I think that's an important thing that I get out of watching my sponsor me, you know? But I did. I took my time on step four. I had a little aversion to it. I was kind of avoiding it. It didn't feel good, and I didn't really know. One of my problems before I came here was this, I had this problem with, I thought I could fix myself if I was just more spiritual. I thought God would love me more and give me good things if I was just a more spiritual, pious woman, right? If I meditated more, if I, you know, cut off all my hair to absolve myself of my earthly body, all these things, like, it was really weird, okay? It was super warped spiritual stuff in there. And so, so I think I had this fear, I had this problem where it was like, if I don't get to experience pain, that means I'm taking my life for granted. That means I'm not being grateful for what I have. So I did a lot to kind of neglect myself emotionally out of this idea that I should have more control over my emotions, and this idea that, you know, I would be ungrateful if I felt bad about anything. And again, some of the stuff that has happened has been like really painful. It's been hard to kind of walk away from, and it made the drinking worse and worse. Honestly, like, I would drink and then I would create trauma, and I would drink and then create more trauma, which I would drink over and then create more pain, and it was just an ongoing endless cycle. So I built up some stuff over the years, some resentments and some pain. But when I finally did get to, you know, get to sit down and be patient with myself, I was very lucky. I was living alone. I remember having a period of time where I took my workbook and I threw it across the room, and I just laughed. I just thought it was so funny. I was so angry that I threw my workbook across the room, and I just thought it was hilarious that I had expressed that much feeling and, like, really, like, let it out. You know what I mean? Because I think I never really have let it out before. So, except when I was drunk. When I was drunk, you could have my whole sob story and then some. But I remember talking to my sponsor about that. She said, for people like us, that's a good thing, to finally start moving forward and expressing feelings that we're not necessarily comfortable with, but that do have a point. Like, having anger like that or sorrow like that has a point, has a place in my life. It's not like I need to feed on it and just be this angry woman all the time. But it's like, when things make me angry, I get to examine them today and think about why and think about how I need to change the situation. And you know what? If I can't step out of it, that's healthy. That's a really good thing. Our emotions can be tools if we know how to work with them. It takes a while. I had an app on my phone called Sober Tool that gives you this list of feelings that you can have. I didn't even know there were so many feelings to have. And so I would reference that from time to time. And I do believe thoroughly that doing step five with another person that is like us, another alcoholic, that's really important. Is really important, because I don't know about you, but sometimes I can be delusional, and I will, you know, if I can tell myself my higher power, then the channel of communication can get murky. I can convince myself that God doesn't accept me, or that God accepts some really horrible stuff. That's, you know what I mean? So telling another person, A, keeps you in check, but B, finally relieves you of this sense that it is only happening to me, because it is not. Alcoholics across the world have experienced what I've experienced. I'm sure a lot of people in here have. We create a lot of hurt for ourselves, a lot of trauma, self-inflicted wounds. And so when I finally shared my story with my sponsor, and she, you know, she got to tell me that she's been through some of the same stuff, I don't know why it relieves us. I have no idea. There's something really powerful in that. Sometimes I wonder, like, am I just this sick fuck that gets off on people's pain? And I don't think it's that. I think it's just that I'm not lonely anymore with it. Does that make sense? It's like we have this big vat of crazy that we just go and throw all of our crap into, and it kind of like gets off of us, and we can keep moving forward in a lighter way. And that's what sponsorship does for us. That's what working with someone with step five and the rest of the steps does to us is as we get to not only be told that we're not any different than any other alcoholic and that's okay, and see that someone else got through it, but we also get to really have someone else's eyes on our character defects, which is not always easy for all of us. So being called out and being told that, you know, this is where you continue to make these mistakes and let these things continue to happen, and this is how you can change it, that I don't think I could have done steps 6 and 7 without that. I don't think I would have been willing. I think I'm really good at getting myself into sticky situations and that I can't get out of because I have no boundaries, and then becoming a victim. And that was like my game. So when I did finally get to do steps 6 and 7, I was told to keep the list short. I'm a self berater. Like, I will always be super mean to myself. I wouldn't be super mean to you, but I will always have some nasty words for myself. And that has changed a lot, but, you know, I'm my own biggest critic. So I had to keep the list short, and I mean, that was harder than it sounds, but I did. And her reasoning for this was because where I was in my program at that time, well, who I was then will change based on my life experiences. So as I get a relationship, something that I had no desire or interest in at the beginning of my, time in recovery and in the program, I thought boys were gross. I wanted nothing to do with them. I was like, love. I had resigned myself to being a spinster. But when I did finally find someone to step into a relationship with, their other did come up, you know, and I had to start getting myself in check and preparing more step 6 and 7 work to kind of work through that stuff. As I developed my career, you know, like, more character defects came up. I was incredibly tired and cranky and kind of on edge for a solid year or maybe even two. And so more character defects came up that didn't apply to my life then as they do today. So I'm really grateful that I got to keep it short. And the thing is, when I did humbly ask God to remove my character defects, I think God took away things that I hadn't even put on the list, that I probably hadn't even thought about, because I had been living like that my whole life, and I wasn't aware. The thing is about, like they say, we're cleaning our house, clean house. You know, that's what we're doing when we do this, metaphorically speaking. But, like, if my house was built wrong, and I never knew that you don't put an oven on top of the roof to cook your soup, then, I mean, like, that's normal to me, right? If I never had doors on my house, and everybody's like, that's not normal. That's normal to me. So I had to learn how to adjust my house, like, rebuild it in a way that was, like, more normal. And I think that word normal, like, really freaked me out for a long time. Like, I don't want to be normal, but I'm so comfortable with being normal today. It feels so good. So God really took away some character defects that I wasn't aware of, that I didn't put on the list, but that I felt very, very much so in my life after that. I think I had always thought that relationships, romance or otherwise, were destined to be toxic and difficult and hard, and there always has to be some kind of, like, I don't really like you, but I guess we're doing this relationship. That stopped after step 7. I can do relationships where I'm happy. The man I decided to be with shortly after step 7 and well after a year into my sobriety, the man I decided to be with, I get along with him really well. We laugh a lot. And when I met him, I was like, just a friend, no, innocent. But, like, I finally was like, maybe I can just get along with someone and love them too. You know what I mean? Mind blown, seriously. Steps 8 and 9, they're another one I took my time on. I think I was afraid of contacting people from my past. And I really appreciate that my sponsor keeps it kind of specific to people that we have harmed, not just people that I've annoyed. You know what I mean? Because I've annoyed probably everybody that I've run into from the age of 21 on. That's a big list. But the people that I've truly, genuinely harmed was actually a much shorter list than I felt like I had earned. And I did make those calls. And I did... you know, they promise in the big book that a lot of people will say sorry back. And I am, my life has been sick people, like, my whole life. So I called a bunch of sick people, and they were just like, cool, thanks, no big deal, don't mention it. But I didn't get it, you know, the program or anything. So I didn't really get a lot of apologies back, and that's okay. That wasn't the point to me. That wasn't it at all. I didn't need apologies back. I needed to clear my spirit. And the thing is, though, sometimes I still feel a little mad at myself for the stuff I did. I do. And but I don't want to harass people. I had a dream on Monday. There was one woman, the woman whose wedding I was supposed to be in, who has not forgiven me. She doesn't want to talk to me. I can't blame her. But I had a dream on Monday that that she had. And I think it is inspiring some courage in me to maybe reach back out, because it felt really good. Like, in the dream, when I, like, walked away from her after I'd gotten to make my amends, I just started sobbing with joy. Like, and I woke up feeling really, really good. I didn't wake up crying, but I woke up feeling really, really good. And so I think, you know, when I'm done doing this thing that is so life-consuming right now, this massive test that I'm doing for work, then I will call her on Friday and see where that goes. No harm in trying, right? I've already been rejected a few times, so another one won't kill me. So steps 10, 11, and 12 are the maintenance steps. Super cool steps. Love these steps because they give me something to keep coming back to keep myself in check and to keep growing spiritually. And I really, really appreciate that. Step 10 has helped me out so much since I finished those steps. I really have gotten a lot more humble about saying I'm wrong, and this is how I'm wrong, and I need to apologize for it now. And so the cool thing about step 10 is I'm not really harming people in this big way anymore, because I'm not living alcoholically, but I am still fallible. I am still human. I do still fail. I still hurt people sometimes with careless words or quick reactions, and I'm wrong sometimes, maybe more than I think, but I am wrong. So I get to really reflect on and continue writing that step 4 list. So that's where I do step 10. I keep writing it down. I keep that pen on the paper when the resentment is bad enough. You know, and the past few years, after post step 9, and post step 12, and with the relationship and with the career, like, I've built some resentment since then, but I keep coming back to my page and I keep writing them down. And that really helps. Like, get it out. Step 11, I don't know what it is. I feel like I don't meditate enough. I try to take quiet time to myself, but I probably don't get enough of that. My life has been pretty hectic. But that's one of those things, like, you know, I come from a place of being really hard on myself. And it's not like I need to be super easy on myself, but it's like I don't need to berate myself and abuse myself because I don't meditate enough. Like, that's not the point of this. But I do pray a lot more. I pray a lot more than I ever have before in my whole life. And it feels really good. And you know what? When I pray and I ask God for things, I say please. And it feels good. It brings some kind of warm gushiness into my body. And I say thank you. I've said thank you in prayer for a very, very long time. And it helps. It helps me keep that connection alive. Because I'm, you know, thank you for AA. Thank you for having a working body. Thank you for having friends in my life today that understand and support me. There's a lot to be grateful for. Thank you for helping me get sober and recover and helping me get to AA, even though you were spanking me the whole way here. I really appreciate it. I appreciate what God does for me. And I call God God just for the sake of convenience. I was on this, like, good one once, and I was like, God, what do I call you? God, what do I call you? I don't know your name. And I, like, really was on that for a while. And it just kind of came to me one day. It wasn't, like, in English, but it was a sense. Like, it doesn't matter what you call me. When you're talking to me, I know. And so I just, you know, I call God God just so people understand what I'm talking about, but it doesn't really, God knows when I'm talking to God, you know. Because sometimes I'll be like, oh, my God, and I'm not really talking to God. So it's not, you know, I don't know. And step 12 is helping other alcoholics. This is another place where I want to be hard on myself. But when I talk to people that know what's going on in my life, they're like, look, you need, first things first, I'm developing a career that it takes a lot of work and it's really hard. I am becoming a teacher. Another thing I had nothing, wanted nothing to do with when I got into these rooms. I was a substitute. I was like, I want my freedom. That sounds like that sucks. And about like a year into it, I was like, maybe I need to be a teacher. I don't know. And then, but that's taken a lot of my time. So when I talk to people that know what I'm going through or that have been teachers, they're always like, don't burn yourself out by overloading yourself with AA commitments on top of all the extra school that you have. I'll always come back to AA. I keep coming back to my Tuesday meeting. I didn't stop. I did do a Saturday young people meeting that I had to cut out because homework was due on Sunday, and I had to start balancing like what I needed to do to move forward in life, because the thing is about AA is what it's giving to me is the ability to function as a real human being in the world. It's not giving to me a place to hide from life forever, right? And so because AA has given me the ability to function as a real human in the world, I can take my real humanity and I can move forward. But sometimes that means like I have to make sacrifices. And the thing is, like, the fear comes from this place. I never want to be an alcoholic again. I never want to go back down that road, and I never want to get too far away from AA to where I am not to a dangerous place. Because if we get too far away, and I feel like a lot of us have probably seen this, if we get too far away, it starts getting to be the danger zone. This is my safe zone. And you keep my safe zone permeating throughout the rest of my day and the rest of my life because I regularly check in with AA. But you know what? I don't have to be afraid of that as long as I keep doing what I'm doing. And I'm gonna be one of those people that's right in the middle and doing all this stuff. I know it. I just need a little time to get my life together. I had a friend once say, like, if your friends are mad at you for getting your life together, they're probably not your friends. So I try to keep that in mind because I want to help more. Like, I want to be in service more. I want to be a part of Acupaw and all these beautiful things that I think are really good for us. And I know I will be. I need to be a little patient because I'm one of those, like, I tend to overload my plate and then get really mad at myself for not being superhuman enough to achieve it all. And so as long as I'm achieving what I can in manageable moments and consistently with the follow through, then I'm going to be okay. But that's what AA gave to me. That's the thing, is the spiritual awakening is not God pounding lightning bolts into my brain and I'm, whoa, you know, it's not like that. It's like I can live today without tremendous anxiety, and that is a spiritual awakening. I can talk to people today and tell the truth and feel comfortable with them, and that is a spiritual awakening. I am not afraid by my own shadow anymore, and that is a spiritual awakening. Like, I think when we want our spiritual awakenings to feel like drugs, then we're like, it would be setting myself up to fail if that's what I wanted, right? If I wanted it to feel like my best high ever, it's not going to. My spiritual awakening comes from the profound, deep peace that I carry with me everywhere I go in life that I did not have before AA. And so thank you for letting me be your speaker tonight. I really appreciate it. Thank you for giving me that peace. Thank you for letting me work with you and for working with me when I felt like I was someone that didn't deserve any kind of love or good stuff. And you gave it to me anyway. And I'm here to give back. I love you guys. Thank you so much.